have, you know, those little, little stickers that you return envelope. No, no. He doesn't have them with him?
Am I stand up?
No.
Here comes Mary.
All right. Calling the meeting to order, and we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Sorry, Eric. Cut you off here.
Shoot. Hey, Mary, would you like to call the roll, please? Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Alfred?
Here.
Duber?
Here.
Bonk?
Here.
Klein?
Here.
Braverman?
Here.
Cluder?
Yes.
Perry?
Yes, here. I don't know what I'm talking about. I need a motion to approve the minutes of the regular meeting of October 9th, please.
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Klein. Thank you, Mr. Duber. Any comments, questions about the minutes? Being none, Mary, will you call the roll?
Alfred?
Yes.
Duber?
Yes.
Bonk?
Yes.
Klein?
Yes.
Braverman?
Yes.
Cluder? Yes. Perry?
Yes. Next, I need a motion to approve the minutes of the special meeting of November 6th. Do I have a motion, please?
Motion made.
Thank you, Mr. Duber. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Bonk. Thank you. Any changes?
I would just say that instead of it saying the comments by the mayor, Chagrin Boulevard traffic problem, I would have it say Chagrin Boulevard light correction or flow improvement.
Traffic flow improvement.
Traffic resolutions.
Well, okay. Certainly improvements.
Okay. Do you have that, Mary?
So you're saying it's not a problem?
It is.
All right.
Just skip.
Mary, can you call the roll?
Alfred?
Yes.
Duber?
Yes.
Bonk?
Yes.
Klein?
Yes.
Braverman?
Yes.
Cluder? Yes. Perry?
Yes. Okay, next I need a motion to approve the treasurer's report of September 30th, please.
Motion made.
Thank you, Mr. Duber. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Bonk. Mr. Bloom, perhaps you can come to the mic. And also, for council, we did get our budget last week and discussed it at the finance committee meeting. And you've had a week to look at it, and we're going to vote on it next month. But this is a great opportunity to ask Mr. Bloom and the mayor if you do have questions about it before we vote on it.
Or next month at the finance meeting.
Yes, you're welcome all to come to the finance meeting again. Although the finance committee's done speaking on it, so if you do plan on coming, make it known that you do have some questions about the budget to talk about, okay? So, Mr. Bloom, you want to start with just today's report and
then? Sure. If you look at the report for this month of September, the general fund continues to be in really good shape cash-wise. Again, if you look at the ending balance, September 30th versus January 1st, it appears to be up about $425,000. In truth, it's not really that good. That includes some estate tax money that needs to be transferred out and will be next month. But even if you factor that out, we're still up about $311,000 over the beginning of the year, which is very good. As a comparison, a year ago at this time, at the end of September, we were down $184,000 from January through September. A couple highlights on the front page. If you look right below the September expense column, the second line down, the street maintenance and repair fund, $99,000. Almost all of that is the second payment on a new truck for the service department over a two-year period. Going down two lines from there, capital improvement, $227,000. That is all construction spending on the new service department building, which is, through this month, showing here is about 90% paid, complete. And two lines below that, in the infrastructure levy line, $72,000, is almost entirely the new driveway, also at the service department building. And if you go through the report itself, which I won't do in detail, but I will tell you the general fund itself and the revenue side, page one of the revenue section, revenue report. The target percentage after 9 months is 75% roughly, and we're at about 82.2%. Again, adjusting for the estate tax, which is in there. So we're well over our target goal there. And then if you go to the expense report in the back, and go to page nine, which is the last line of the general fund on the top line. And again, there's a couple of timing issues, but we're at 73% of budget instead of 75. So we're, again, we continue to be over budget on the revenue side and under budget on the expense side through the month.
Anybody have any questions?
I just had a quick question. Sure. I'm looking at the second page of the report. I was just curious, do we have an opportunity to do some rebalancing and increase our interest yield on our monies? Do we ever do that?
We would revisit our investment policy to see if we could get some.
As far as what?
I'm just asking if we rebalance to get more interest for the money that's lying idle.
To be honest, there's not much to get.
Not much to squeeze out anywhere?
I mean, banks don't want public funds at all. They'd be just as happy if we went away altogether.
But remember, we were going to talk about revising our investment policy. Maybe
we could look into that.
Yeah.
We may be able to tweak it and get a few more dollars, but basically there's not much to get in that area right now. So. It's been that way for about 3 years now. So.
Okay.
Anybody else? All right, Mary, will you call the roll, please?
Alfred?
Yes.
Duber?
Yes.
Bonk?
Yes.
Klein?
Yes.
Braverman?
Yes.
Kluter?
Yes.
Perry?
Yes. Thank you all. Next, I need a motion to approve the tax administrator's report of October 31st, 2013.
Motion made.
Thank you, Mrs. Kluter.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Alfred. And Mr. Bloom, anything to add on this? I think everybody was actually at our finance committee meeting too, so.
Yeah, there's not too much to add. All the good news on the income tax report is reflected in the treasurer's report, because income tax is the main reason that we're in such a good position right now. If you look at the bottom line across in the second tier, that pretty much summarizes everything for you. Almost all the increase for the year is in the individual taxpayers column, about $224,000. And the business net profits is up quite a bit too, not in terms of dollars, but in percentage. It's up pretty dramatically over last year. And what it boils down to in the end is that we're about $218,000 over budget right now compared to the $100,000 that we were under budget a year ago. So
that's great.
Again.
Anybody have any questions or comments?
I'd invest in this city.
Oh, I did want to add too, so far, November collections are also very high. So
it's
continuing.
Good news.
Yeah.
That's good. A good trend we've seen this year, isn't it? Anybody have any questions for Mr. Bloom about the budget?
Tax administrator's report.
Before we close up this, we can't talk about the budget.
We haven't voted on it.
I know.
Oh.
But while we have him here. I know.
She meant to.
I'm talking about the budget. So anybody have any questions for Mr. Bloom this week about the budget and the budgeting process?
No.
Before we ask him to sit down? No. Okay, then Mary, will you call the roll on the tax administrator's report, please?
Alfred?
Yes.
Duber?
Yes.
Bonk?
Yes.
Klein?
Yes.
Braverman?
Yes.
Kluter?
Yes.
Perry?
Yes. Next, we have discussion of bills to be paid for November in the amount of $532,709.82 and additional expenses of $99,098.41. Does anybody have any?
Is the police pension amount, is that in addition to what shows up on the report? I mean, you've already got a negative $30,000 on the police pension. We got a negative $30,000 on the ending balance for through September, and then we have a $26,000. Is that in addition?
Can you use, just because our meeting's recorded, Mr. Bloom, thank you.
The money that comes in for Properties Pension Fund is uneven. It comes in property tax, so it comes in big chunks every third month.
So that'll be covered by the end of the year?
It'll be covered by the property tax that covers it, and also there's a transfer from the general fund that'll be needed. So it will be covered, yes.
Well, I know it'll be covered. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
I just have one question, mostly about timing. You know, I noticed that we have something like $370,000 total payments on principal and interest and various.
I can answer these.
Is that every November? Is that an annual timing issue?
Yes, but we're almost done with, we have one more payment on this building. The rest are covered by assessments.
Okay, so we manage those, that chunk just.
There's a dedicated revenue source for that debt service. And the payment for this building, we already have the cash in hand.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, I think we pay twice a year. Interest twice a year and principal once a year.
They're itemized right up above in the U.S. Bank area. You get the same, get a little more information about what the different items are.
Right.
They're all payments on projects that are backed by assessments except for the Muni building.
Anybody else? Next, we'll move on to audience comments relating to agenda items only. If you would like to speak, please come to the microphone. Nobody? Okay. Next, we'll move on to old business. We have ordinance number 2013-22 as amended, an ordinance authorizing the mayor to enter an agreement with Luansky Development, LLC, for development of real property in the village and related services. This is, again, on for second reading, and this is up on our agenda for discussion only tonight. So last week, we left with Mr. Braverman raising some issues, and we all got his handout with some points on it. And when I think we left, and people can remind me, we were going to see, I think you were, the law director was going to get a feel for perhaps where the developer is.
I just got an email from Jeff Goss, who said that he's made a number of changes to the developer's comments, which he's going to forward. Hoping the exhibits by the end of this week.
Will it be redlined? Are you going to redline it?
We will. We will have a redline copy for you. Not of the iteration that goes to Jordan and then to the water, but after there are changes against what you've seen. We're hoping to have you the packet of exhibits by the end of this week or early next week.
And also, can you explain to them that when we're done with this development agreement, there'll be another one?
When we're done with this development agreement, there'll be another one. There are some items which have arisen with respect to some infrastructure projects, one of which is there has been an agreement to pay for bike paths in the village.
Multi-use trails.
The subject of the study, I defer to.
Multi-purpose trails.
Multi-purpose trails within the village.
Happy trails.
The main roads to be paid for via an assessment on the development. Also, there may be some other improvements for the development through maybe a financing vehicle, a creative public-private partnership financing opportunity, which will not cost the village additional money.
Steve, the multi-purpose trails, and you said the assessment on the development, is that going to be like an impact fee? Is it like impact that we've had?
It is. The theory behind it is that there is some impact by the development on the traffic. There are existing conditions which could be made worse. One of the ways to solve part of the problem is to get the joggers and the bicyclists and whoever else off of the street, off the portion of the road that's traveled by the vehicles. that's the idea behind this, is to ameliorate any traffic concerns that may be arising out of this. It would be, and we've talked about this, it would be a petitioned assessment, whereby the property owner requests the assessment be levied on the property, which makes it, from a statutory standpoint, a lot, you know, there's no conflict there. They're asking for it, and we do it.
This is the first we're hearing of these multipurpose paths. Where would they run?
Well, it's not really the first. We discussed this a while ago, and they've done a study.
We have meetings just on that topic.
That's gonna be a whole separate.
Okay, we've had discussions for a study, but the first time we're hearing that there is a funding mechanism.
One side of all the main streets.
Of all the mains, and the main streets being defined as?
Raynard, Lander, Emery, Miles, Harvard.
And this is further down the pike, so it really doesn't impact this development agreement. This is gonna, these would be amendments or addendums, maybe?
There will be sort of a phase two of the development agreement. I don't know if that's the right way to describe it, but a second document that'll be self-contained that has these issues in it.
And also the purchase of village land.
And there will be some purchase price paid to the village for the proposed use of the village property, the purchase of the village's property, that is south of the Red Robin that's currently being used for drainage facilities.
I guess my concern is this would be done after this agreement is done?
Well, just another agreement. We don't want to let this one linger.
Yeah.
We want to agree to the things we've agreed to.
Yeah, the answer is yes.
It's a separate agreement.
Yes.
So what is his incentive after this agreement to go ahead with the new third agreement?
There are some things that the village is able to do.
We have coercion power. That's all I want.
The purpose of this agreement essentially is to drive the construction of the shopping center itself. And all of the language that's been developed in this document has been pointed towards that specific end. So when we, you know, migrate over to something else, it ought to be in a separate agreement that we need to work on.
But I get what, you know, Mr. Bong's saying is just how do we, you know, how do we enforce it so that they don't go, oh, never mind.
Well, and I expect what'll happen is right now there's sort of this thing that says there'll be some granting of property.
Once you give it away, you gave it away.
But this won't be giving away. That portion will probably come out, that language will probably come out of this agreement and be in greater detail in the subsequent agreement as to how the property is to transfer and for what price.
If this is the carrot, the language had better be very clear that they are committed and tied.
Can we add a contingency into this, you know, just a small little contingency into this that basically loops it into that separate agreement?
Yeah. The language is, the current agreement doesn't reflect that.
Cross-referencing.
Well, I think there are a number of good reasons to move forward with this document. And I think there are also good reasons for the parties to continue to talk about a subsequent agreement. And I think both parties are going to be comfortable with this process.
Are the exhibits coming with the next edition?
Sooner. I'm hoping to have that by the end of this week.
Okay.
Steve, can you elucidate what the good things are to move ahead with this document? You just cursorily said.
To tie up some of the details that are in here that aren't anywhere else, like the 65% from outside of Northeast Ohio. There's a number of requirements, this construction sequencing, fencing during construction. There's a whole lot of things in here.
And there was a commitment made at the time of the campaign that we will have these things in the development agreement. We're going to deliver on that promise sooner rather than later. There are some things that as the project has developed didn't make it in time to make it into this agreement that needs to be followed up with another agreement.
We don't want this to linger longer.
I don't understand why you would not incorporate it. I mean, it's.
Because we haven't gotten it done yet.
I mean, what is it gonna take? I mean, we're only on second reading. If you're gonna get it done, I mean, the idea of not having an incomplete agreement followed by another thing, it's like signing an agreement without the exhibits. You would never do that.
It's not incomplete. It will stand on its own. Then there's additional deals and topics to.
What is the coercive power you have? That's the question.
The way I would think about it is that this is handling, connecting up the zoning dots that relate back to the election that was held this week, or last week. The subsequent agreement is a financing component of it. That's the way to think of it conceptually. And it's not uncommon to have an agreement as to how the process is going to go and then have how, you know, certain financial aspects of it are going to work.
But I guess that.
You're not giving anything away in this document.
No, but I guess, you know, to an extent, I agree with what he's saying in terms of how do we protect against a change in the discussions we've had in terms of that funding.
Because he needs the land that we have.
No, I understand that, but I mean, what stops the developer from saying, after we sign this document, saying, you know what, that's actually more money than I was thinking, or you know what, I changed my mind on it. You know, there has to be something that we can.
What prevents him from doing that now before we sign the agreement?
Nothing does.
Right.
But I'm saying, but we're trying to get the whole thing intact together.
Because there's some things that are gonna.
He's got his zoning. He's got his zoning right now. I would rather be in his position right now than our agreement.
Well.
I mean, my view is, and maybe the working for an oil company gave me a little jaundiced view of the world. It's, you had every detail pounded down, cleared up, signed and delivered before you went there.
There's things in here we want. Things he wants are in the next agreement.
I think we're getting off topic a little bit. I just want to know, Mr. Byron, what is there in this agreement that basically bars them from making, you know, from retracting what they've offered?
I don't think they have sufficient access unless the next agreement happens, because we're going to be taking the actual land, the land deal out where we sell to them the property to access that's south of the.
Okay, so you're taking out the agreement,
yes,
of the port. Okay, that is,
okay,
you just addressed it.
I thought I had mentioned that but that is a significant aspect of what will be happening.
So
okay.
They basically have an island without.
No, they. I mean, they don't have sufficient access.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So that you just answered my follow-up question.
Yeah. And if I could, just at the risk of beating a dead horse, this agreement does include some provisions that we view as important, apart from the others that Steve mentioned, and that were central points of discussion before council and before the Planning Commission during the entire consideration of the zoning code and during the election after council acted on that. Of particular importance, as the mayor mentioned, was the limitation on retailers already in the area. And also the declaration of restrictions with respect to the buffer area, and also the details of the restrictions related to Waterford, and so we view that as of importance, so that, frankly, so that the residents can be comfortable that the protections that we told them would be in place are in place. That's separate and apart from these other issues, which obviously we have every intention of moving forward on. And as Steve explained, we've got good reason to continue to work on that with the council.
And furthermore, we have included in this is a construction sequencing that's important to keep tied in because of its relative importance to the development and construction of the buffer. And, you know, how do they get to that point? So there's a commitment in here that if nothing happens, that stuff happens. And that's critical to the overall property at this point, as much as anything else is. So we want to get that in place and then move forward to these other elements.
Well, actually, we're not beating a dead horse, but we're preparing the horse for the race. And that is to say, this body, in my opinion, is at the threshold of its review of matters, this agreement, other agreements. And I thought what these fellows were talking about had to do with the fact that we may need to have a complete picture before any one of the pieces make enough sense to us for us to actually move forward with it. Now, you might not have the document written, some of the other documents that are going to be included, but I think the concepts have to be put down on the table so we understand where we're heading. And hopefully that will take place before any voting takes place.
I think what I heard, though, was Mr. Bonk and Mr. Duber were satisfied with the explanation of how do we get to the next part. Is there
if the land portion sale is removed, right, we do have the coercion that I was looking for.
Okay, and so you're satisfied?
Well, on that issue, I have a couple of others.
Bring them up.
The other issue was...
Am I to assume that among the seven of us, only these two fellows and myself have any thoughts about this agreement that need to be reviewed by this body?
No.
No.
Huh?
That's not what I said.
We haven't made it all the way to this side of the table.
Well, that's what I'd like to, hear what everybody has to say before we get a new addition, because I think that's relevant, very relevant.
Do you have something to comment on Herb's comments?
No, not on my comments. I'm trying to say, I'm going to step back for a minute. I'd like to hear what the other council people have to say about the Pinecrest Development Agreement. I may have missed more than one thing, and I accept that probability. And so I want to hear what others have to say about the agreement.
If I may? First of all, before I do, Steve, I wonder, you did say that there are some changes that are in progress of being made to the document based on the input that Mr. Braverman
Correct.
Provided. Can you summarize in any way, be a little more specific about that so that we don't go over the same ground if it's already going to be addressed?
You'll see it soon.
If it was on Herb's list, it's we are taking it seriously. Some of the changes are being made and sent to Jordan for him to look at and think about. I don't have the specifics, because I just got sent an email saying
they're making it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Then I'll presume that to be the case. I had a couple of questions. There was the first time we saw this document, and I'm looking at the paragraph relative to the odor control, and there was some conversation, and mostly Mr. Bronk raised some issues about whether there was some clear metric that could be established rather than the language that's in here, which is at least a little qualitative as to what a, you know, quote unquote persistent odor is. But I wonder if there has been any motion in that particular area, whether we have been able to establish some language.
When we last talked about it, Ed was going to look to see if he could find any.
Yeah, and Ed, were you able to?
It's done. I don't think Mr. Burns is real interested in doing it because it's horrifically expensive when you have a point source that you know what the odor is. It's pretty easy, a chemical plant making stuff.
Right.
What you would have to do is multiple times during the year before you do construction, do a gas sampling of the perimeter of the property line so you had the natural odors. And because there's biological plants in grow, you'd have to take samples spring, winter, fall, identify them. That'd be your baseline.
Mm-hmm.
And that'd be all done by GC mass spec. And then when a resident complained, you would hire the same technician to do a gas survey, run the GC mass spec, and see if there was a new peak, and that would be identified, and that would be the new odor, and that would be the new odor to be fixed.
What's GC mass spec?
Gas chromatography, which separates all the components, and then mass spec does the actual identification of the compound. I mean, you first gather it, you separate them, and then you identify it. If you had a, like a sewer plant where you had three compounds out there, it's pretty easy. You do a baseline and then you say you're done. But because of the seasonality issue of that property, you'd be wanting to do it winter, spring, fall to establish your baseline and then use the metrics between it. I mean, I guess the answer is you can identify it and you could sit there and say, is that a natural compound? And the answer is that grows in anybody on Waterford Court's backyard. And then the question becomes down to is detection level and what is the level that you can recognize, because there's the instrument will identify compounds below your nose level. I mean, so then you have, you know, at what is the threshold of an informed nose?
Right, and I guess, absent that kind of baseline study, of which there is obviously a...
The baseline study would be horrifically expensive.
If that makes it unfeasible from an economic perspective, it certainly might.
Well, it's not my money. It'd be his money.
Yeah, I understand. We're left with the language that's in here currently, just as long as everybody we understand that it's a little bit open to interpretation potentially.
Well, there's firms who would love to do the baseline work and come out regularly and inspect your property line.
You know, we're going through the building department and the plans examiner review of this new Indian restaurant that's going to be on Chagrin Boulevard, and they have put in enough ventilating systems that there would be no odor coming out of it. I'm not sure that there aren't other ways that this is going to be addressed, and that's through the ventilating and exhaust systems from each particular restaurant that will be, you know.
Well, the question is, to what extent you smell Red Robin and Bahama Breeze now?
French fries.
Smell Red Robin?
Yeah.
So, you know,
the
restaurants, the likelihood of the tenants that will be there that would create odors, and they're going to be restaurants. So it's more of same.
And they're going to be over on that end.
You know, so what was put in there was intended to address that kind of, you know, we're not introducing a chemical plant, you know.
Right, you know, see.
Maybe a nail salon.
System.
But, you know, those things are so diffuse by the time they get out.
Would not want to have
And it's worth noting maybe that this particular provision, like the other provisions that are specifically addressed at the residents of Waterford Court, is a negotiated provision. So I don't want council to be left with the impression that this is something that we, as the developers, dreamed up as a means of appeasing a concern. This was the product of a negotiation to get to just these kinds of issues, and it's as a result of that the kind of odor abatement equipment that I think you're talking about with regard to the Indian restaurant is incorporated into this.
Right.
Plus the other tenants aren't going to want to smell anything
across
the parking lot.
It's going to be a bigger problem for adjacent tenants. I can tell you from my own experience in designing nail salons next to high-end restaurants, that is a much bigger problem to deal with.
But how do you solve it?
You solve it mechanically, and you solve it structurally. You have physical separation between the tenants, and you have air systems that do the filtering.
I'm not talking about the mechanics, so what you mean. Who solves it and when is what I'm concerned about.
The building department.
The building department will press those issues as they come in. In the same manner that Giff Dyer addressed the issues with the Chula restaurant when it came in for plan review, you know, he will see the same concerns that may be voiced for other tenants that might come in for this development.
Why we're talking about that issue, and Herb brought this up before, I think we need to change the language to not only say Waterford Court, but Waterford Court and the adjacent property owners, so that we're not just looking at Waterford Court odor issues. There's people on Harvard, there's people on Pinecrest who still have their houses, and there's people, if I'm not mistaken, on, all of Pinecrest was not bought out, is that correct?
All but two.
All but two, so we do have people on there that should be covered. And I think it's important that we have the language that, and adjacent property owners, I mean, so that they are covered by whatever standards we're establishing for Waterford Court, because we do represent the village.
Do we have, odor standards outside of this agreement in our regular laws?
Yes.
Where?
Thank you.
No person shall erect, continue, or use or maintain a dwelling, building, structure, or place for a residence, or for the exercise of a trade, employment, or business, or for the keeping or feeding of an animal, which by occasioning noxious exhalations or noisome or offensive smells becomes injurious to the health, comfort, or property of individuals or of the public.
Is that U1? What are you reading that from?
That is 521.09, it's a general offense code. It's not a zoning regulation.
How's that measured, though? I mean, what one person thinks, you know, smells like a rose might apply something else to someone.
Well, I'm allergic to cheap perfume ingredients. Seriously.
Well, in 19 years, Mayor, it's come up once in one area, and that's over on,
Yeah,
I mean, is it what the city determines to be
noxious?
Kind of noxious, or?
You have to send someone out there who would be able to explain to the court what the odor was.
Noxious.
And establish that it, I mean, this isn't just a one-time thing, it would have to be a regular occurrence.
Well, I appreciate the language. I have a sense that language might have been acceptable for residential purposes in a bedroom community that has no large commercial.
No, actually, it's state law.
What do you mean?
3767.13. We also incorporate the provision from state law in ours. It's from the health and safety chapter.
That sentence controls all the noxious odors in all the commercial locations in the state?
It is unlawful in the state of Ohio to make those types of smells.
I appreciate that. I guess my concerns have to do with this project presenting a different size of issue in many of these areas, and therefore we have to have controls. We have to have processes which allow us to resolve some of these differences without costing the village unnecessary amounts of money. In other words, all this stuff about sound and smell and so forth, traffic, some of the provisions would be acceptable if I had a sense that the tests were going to be run by people we decide should run the tests and paid for by the developer, or in some process paid for by someone other than the village, because the general language that we're dealing with in many of these provisions leaves a lot of open questions as to what we do when an actual circumstance arises, an actual episode. And my sense is that a lot of people are going to turn to the village, and many of us won't be here when that happens, and have to answer the question, why didn't you make a provision that would cover this rather obvious potential circumstance? Where was your imagination and your, when did you take off your rose-colored glasses and put on your jaundiced-colored glasses to see how you're going to deal with things that don't go right? And that's part of the problem. And so some of the answers that we had at the last meeting and at this meeting are like, everybody's going to do this, and therefore, you don't need an agreement if everybody's going to live in Valhalla and everything's going to go perfectly. The agreement is to cover those instances where things don't go right, not where they do go right. Those instances, I pray for those, and sometimes they occur. We don't have to go to the rule book when they occur. It's when things go sour that we have to look at the rule book and see if it's definitive enough to tell us who has to do what and when at whose expense and so forth. And that's what we have to do with any agreements that come down the pike. I don't think it's that challenging a job if everybody understands the job and does it. That's all I'm saying.
So
You know, I mean, it's not an answer to me to say that, well, the guy next door will be unhappy about the smell. That's not an answer, because the people are not gonna go to the guy next door. The people are gonna come into this room and say, what are you gonna do about this smell that I'm incurring? I'm gonna say, well, the guy next door was supposed to take care of it. He smells it right there next to him, and he's not doing a thing. Isn't that a shame? Because we didn't put anything in ours, in our document that solves the problem in spite of the guy next door. That's why we can't, whenever I hear that some other third party is gonna take care of this issue when it arises, I get a little nervous, because that's not so.
I think I have a question that you make some points that make me step back and wonder. This development agreement is agreement between Orange Village, Waterford Court residents, and the developer, right?
They're not signing this agreement.
It's really Orange Village.
It's Orange Village and the developer.
And the developer. But a lot of our attention was focused on the Waterford Court residents and protecting them the most. Is there any reason it needs to stick with the Waterford Court residents and can expand? I know that they were our primary people that we were trying to protect, but is there any limitations? I know we have state code and Orange Village codes that actually address many of these same things, mm-hmm. at very similar levels, but where are we at with that?
Well, if I may, as I mentioned at last week's work session, part of what council is seeing in this development agreement is what the developer committed to do from the onset of this process, address the specific concerns of the Waterford Court residents. The concerns that are being raised here aren't outlandish, they aren't unreasonable, but frankly, they're concerns that, to the extent that they are legitimate, ought to be concerns across the board, not simply with regard to this project. The same sort of issues could be addressed at the Wendy's on Chagrin Boulevard and the impact that it may have on adjacent residential areas. So frankly, given the scope of the issues that we're talking about, I think it may be helpful to separate the different matters that are trying to be addressed here. The development agreement is aimed at a number of specific targets. One of those was the concerns of the Waterford Court residents that the developer committed to address and addressed with this council's encouragement.
Where you live?
Where I happen to live, but
okay.
by no means is my residence there playing a role in that, as my neighbor who's been
just
paying attention to this.
Just think that's an important thing to...
Either way, the point is that the concerns that are being raised are really more general concerns. If council wants to address those concerns with respect to this project and other developments, then frankly, it may be appropriate to look at ordinances rather than agreements. Remember, this is an agreement, a development agreement, that regulates the manner in which this development will be constructed and will operate once it's constructed.
Why don't we just do a simple radius of the development? I mean, that seems like the easiest way to do it. We're not talking about one person versus another. Why don't we just do a simple radius? That would kind of resolve this whole problem.
You may have a due process problem with that, because if you're picking on one, this is the difference between an agreement and a law. If you're picking on one use to regulate differently than other uses, which may not be different. For instance, here we're talking primarily about restaurant odors. There are other locations in the village where restaurant odors exist that may not be regulated in the same fashion.
There's a fundamental difference. You came to us and asked for a zoning change. Everybody else was using the zoning. So we changed the rules for you, or we're in the process of changing the rules. That's the fundamental difference. The Wendy's was on a commercially zoned place, and everybody knew that. These residents, whoever they are, Waterford Court and on the other side, bought their property with some expectations, and there has been a, and I'll use the word, a giant wealth transfer from those residents to your developer by changing the zoning. And I think we're obliged to protect them. That's the fundamental difference in your argument. You forgot about, this is a new zoning that you initiated.
No, my answer is simply make a law, rather than insist on an agreement from the developer to change the development that it's been presenting.
Well, that's not changing it, just making a general radius of where there's.
Sure, because.
People that are gonna move in after it's built, knowing what's there before they move in?
It's an interesting question.
The development would, in order to accomplish that, the development would be different than what we've presented.
The wind will solve that problem for us. There'll be complaints from everyone.
No, I mean, that's a good, Steve, how do we, I mean, is there a way to do it where we can do some type of radius with existing properties versus?
I'm sorry.
You could draw a line, adjacent properties to the development.
Just let me ask my question to Steve. Steve, is there a way to do some type of radius or something else that could basically limit it to existing properties versus, you know?
In the agreement?
Yeah.
I don't see a problem in the agreement. The due process doesn't apply to an agreement, but you've gotta get agreement with it.
Right, but is there any, I mean, does anybody see any fundamental problem with doing that? And then it solves every problem we're talking about here. Protects the Waterford residents, it protects the other residents, it's pretty.
On Harvard Road.
On Harvard, yes. And I guess the little stretch of Brainerd. And it protects those residents, which, I mean, the reality is those are the only residents that we're super concerned about, because if it's not affecting them, it's not affecting anybody. But I think that there's other people there that it could affect, and I think there's a simple resolution here that we're just avoiding for a reason that I can't really figure out.
Well, let us go back to the negotiating table on that.
I think there's a way to do it with everybody being happy.
I have a hypothetical question. What if an Orange resident and right next door Woodmere resident on Brainerd, Brainerd backs up to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, have a burger odor that they don't like, and they lodge a complaint. Okay,
that's
now
a single incident, though. That's kind of different.
Is it different?
Are you asking,
like, if you're cooking out one day and
yes,
a neighboring
between
jurisdiction?
Yes, and I'm
maybe
asking
if they have an obligation,
if it's
with
not,
radius,
if
they do.
Let's
they
say
might.
We pass
yeah.
this
yeah.
as just
radius,
protecting the Waterford Court residents at a stronger level. What recourse does the Orange resident have and the Woodmere resident have? Because the state law has these protections.
If we're talking about the agreement, the parties that are protected by the agreement are defined by the term of the agreement. That's been the subject of the conversation, whether it's going to be just a simple radius or whatever it is. You raise a question that the Supreme Court punted on in a case out of Middletown, where there was a property in Middletown that allowed the Coke factory to go in there, and in the next door community, the property owner was in a different city. The question is, does that property owner have the right to object to the zoning that goes on in the neighboring community? And there's some complexity to the argument.
It sounds
I'm not sure that there's been a definitive answer to that question.
That sounds like a lawsuit between that party and the developer, and Orange.
You can't operate a nuisance on your property.
Right.
And so the neighboring property, irrespective of the jurisdiction that it's in, if it's in Woodmere, and our contract only covered Orange Village residents, that neighboring property owner would still have a private nuisance remedy if they could make out their case. So nothing that we do here impacts that. The question is, what is the level of protection that can be negotiated between Orange Village and the developer that relates to third-party beneficiaries? Who are you negotiating on behalf of, and what are the terms of the agreement? We've heard you. We've heard the concerns. I would recommend that you give us a chance to go back, have the conversation with the developer on the whole host of concerns that have been raised. Let us come back with definitive answers on the questions that have been asked, and we'll try again in a month.
All right.
Okay.
I know you have a question, Mr., or a concern, but are you done, Mr. Alfred?
Just a couple other small ones, if you don't mind. In, I guess it's Roman numeral four, improvement, security, maintenance, paragraph B on security. The language there just says, at least one security person shall be at the commercial portion of the project during the hours of 10 to 11 p.m. Shouldn't that specify a day? Is that every day? Is that only days when the process, when the development is open, commercial side of the development is open? Is it 6 days a week?
Where are you looking exactly?
So page five?
It's on page, well, it's either page seven or page five, depending on which.
I think we intended it for when it's open. Maybe the wording doesn't reflect that, but I think we intended it for when the development was open.
That's what I presumed, but it wasn't explicit.
Bars and restaurants and hotels are open beyond 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they're open.